Book 2. Ascendance. 112 years ago, Terran standard. 23.3 years ago, Colchisian calendar. Chapter 1. 211. Corferon watched from the shadow of the deck, his calculating gaze moving from the crowd gathered in the shade of the temple rig to Lorgar in the pulpit and back again. Another declined tribe, held in rapture by the acolyte's words, staring up at him as he delivered another self-written sermon. When the preacher had first passed the title of bearer of the word 8 days before, it had been a moment of necessity, desperation almost. Yet he looked back to see in that instant also the hand of the powers, for it had been an inspired decision. The benefits were many. Most obviously that Lorgar commanded far more natural loyalty than Corferon could ever have hoped for himself. There was not a soul whose path they had crossed who was not moved by his words, not touched by his passion and faith. Though they had been avoiding contact, the number of such souls was gradually swelling the size of the congregation. Corferon looked around the camp. It was twice the size it had been before he had met Lorgar, more than replacing the slain converts. Their tents and wagons, their families and beasts, made the affairs of the caravan more complicated. However, as they were all theoretically converts, Corferon had made feeding, organizing, and dealing with the newcomers the problem of Axata. The responsibility seemed like a boon to the master of converts, whereas in fact it enabled the priest to keep the newcomers out of his affairs. And such affairs he now had time to ponder and shape and grow as he desired, unfettered by the demands of sermonizing and seeing to the soul being of his congregation. Lorgar was truly the means to salvation, a figurehead like no other. That he took the eyes of the many away from Corferon was of great value, and as with Axata, the role itself seemed to be its own reward. Lorgar had never looked happier as when he stood before a willing audience listening to his stirring speeches, except perhaps when he spoke in private with Corferon, wrangling over some newly translated nugget of information from the books that Corferon had finally allowed him to read. They had arranged one such session for that wakemain, and Lorgar took the final prayers of the gathering quickly, eager to meet with his teacher. Another slight change in Corferon's positioning from master, but one that made no substantive difference to the influence he held. In reality, Lorgar was a far better proselytizer of Corferon's ideas than he had ever been himself. Possessed of fiery disposition upon the pulpit, but able to extend empathy and compassion, where the priest was hardened to life's miseries and uncaring of others' petty burdens. The two of them descended to Corferon's chamber. Lorgar insisted in remaining billeted with the slaves, despite his new rank and purpose, but spent most of his time here, with the library. It was to the books that the youth now moved, plucking one from the shelf without hesitation to present to Corferon. His expression was one of eagerness. "I think I've finished translating this one," he said. Corferon looked at the book. It was the one with the flowing scripts and strange pictures. Lorgar continued, talking at pace. "It is like nothing else in the library. None of the other languages and dialects came close to helping decode it, so I had to start from scratch. I think, and I know what this sounds like, but I think it is not human in origin." Corferon frowned. "Not human? The pictures, the references, the entire reality described in the text is nothing like a human experience." Lorgar's passion faltered, and his expression became a lopsided smile. "The truth is, I think it's either a book of poetry or a guide to culinary artistry." "A guide to—" "I know," Lorgar shrugged. "It's quite opaque, and I might be wrong. I shall keep working on my translation, but I do not think the contents will be shedding any further light upon the truth." 212. Lorgar sat down on the bed, which made the floor creak, for he had continued to grow at an outstanding pace, and now stood taller even than Axata. His appetite was immense, fueling his huge body, even as the books and Corferon did the same for his equally massive intellect. The youth sighed. "You are not content?" Corferon asked the question lightly, but the last thing he desired was a restless Lorgar. The youth had a tendency to seek out answers for questions others did not even ask. Any sign of ennui signalled work for Corpheron.
"I'm not sure of what the powers intend," confessed Lorgar.
He rested his elbows on his knees and clasped his gigantic hands together.
"There is barely a sentence in all of this library that I have not inscribed upon my thoughts. But I am no closer to seeing the truth. I bear the word, as you did, and the converts grow in number. But this cannot be what the powers desire of us."
Corpheron said nothing, knowing that it was not the time to make suggestions. Lorgar had a look he now recognized well, of a course of thoughts running on their own lines, not to be disrupted.
We are missing something, I think. What we seek is not in the books, but in the stars, perhaps.
You have mastered the arts of the observations and know every single entry in the heavenly scripts by heart.
And nightly we chart the constellations and seek some sign from the powers of what to do. And what do they say?
Nothing, admitted Corpheron. Their gaze is elsewhere, Lorgar. The powers are infinite beings, but they do not waste their attention on the unworthy. The crimes of the Covenant. Their demolition of true faith brought the apathy of the powers to Colchis.
And how will we reignite that faith, my teacher?
With hard...
He fell quiet as he noticed a distant, absent look in the youth's eye, as though he stared through the wall.
Are you listening to me?
There was no reaction from Lorgar at first. Corpheron resisted the urge to raise his voice, to strike Lorgar from his reverie. He saw the youth's lips moving ever so slightly, though the rest of him was immobile.
What are you saying? Speak up!
Listen, father. Corpheron winced at the use of the patriarchal title. Occasionally, Lorgar regressed to such familiarity when he forgot himself.
Listen to the music.
Corpheron strained to hear, but no music came to his ears, only the usual noises of the temple rig readying to continue onwards until rest eve. He moved to the window and opened it, in full knowledge that Lorgar's hearing was uncannily good, like all of his senses, and much else about him. Still, he did not hear any pluck of a string or pipe of a flute.
"I hear nothing, boy," he said,
but realized that Lorgar's gaze had not shifted from its mesmeric state. His conscious mind was not within the cabin. 213.
All of a sudden, Lorgar threw himself backwards onto the cot with a hoarse shout, cracking the timbers beneath his weight. The bed collapsed to the floor with the youth atop. Hands held up to his temples, eyes wide with shock, Lorgar roared, deafeningly loud in the close confines of the chamber. The sound of it toppled Corpheron, sending him crashing to the floor with his hands over his ears, head reeling from the violence of the outburst. Ringing in his ears, spots in front of his eyes, Corpheron squinted across the cabin floor to see Lorgar rolling from side to side, mouth opening and closing like a landed fish, eyes roaming and roving with wild motion. Still dizzy, Corpheron crawled closer, stretching out a hand to comfort his beleaguered ward. His chest felt tight, his throat knotted at the sight of Lorgar beset by fits and tics.
"Come! Come!"
croaked the priest, panic gripping him as he seized Lorgar's huge hand in both of his own, trying to squeeze hard enough for the touch to register through the tumult that continued to rack the youth's huge form. As suddenly as it had started, the seizure ended, and Lorgar sat bolt upright, eyes boring holes through the metal of the wall for several heartbeats. He then turned his head and looked straight at Corpheron.
"I have heard, and I have seen, father,"
the youth declared.
"The powers?"
Corpheron let go of Lorgar's hand and backed away.
"They have communicated with you?"
"I have had a vision. I have seen and heard the truth."
He raised a hand as though listening intently.
"And the song continues, even now."
"What song?"
"The song of the Empyrean, of all time and space, of the universe singing to itself."
Corpheron kept all suspicion from his expression, but he did not like this turn of events. Clearly something had beset his acolyte, but he was not yet willing to believe the powers had intervened directly.
Rest,
he instructed the boy. He fetched the water ewer from the table and handed it to Lorgar, who drank from it as though it were a cup, downing the contents in two mouthfuls.
It is beautiful, said Lorgar,
turning his violet eyes to Corpheron. Gold flecks danced in the pupils.
One is coming. One who will be the ending and the beginning.
214.
On being questioned further, gently, for despite his physical strength, Lorgar's spirit was often still that of a frail adolescent, the acolyte revealed that he had seen a being cloaked in gold and stars, descending from the Empyrean with the wings of an eagle.
What does it mean? Lorgar asked.
I can think of nothing in the messages, nor the observations. It cannot be the fifth prophet, can it?
Corpheron scratched his chin and moved to the door, calling for a slave to bring more water and wine, to give himself a little time to think. While he waited, he considered his options. They were few, and none were to his liking.
It is unprecedented, he eventually admitted.
Lorgar was about to speak, but Corpheron heard steps in the companionway and held up a hand to silence the acolyte.
Say nothing of this yet.
Lorgar looked as though he might protest, but Corpheron's glare forestalled any dissent. A knock at the door announced the arrival of a slave with a fresh jug of water and a bottle of Lanancin Red. Corpheron dismissed the woman and returned his attention to Lorgar, handing him the tepid water, which the youth downed in two more long draughts. The preacher poured wine for himself and sipped, gathering his thoughts before he continued.
If we are not sure what to make of this extraordinary event, then the faithful will be even more perplexed. It is not our place to spread hearsay and speculation. We are ambassadors for the truth. You are the bearer of the word. Until we can say unequivocally what the powers wish us to know, what would you tell them?
The irresistible logic cut off any retort, but Corpheron did not grant Lorgar time to comment before he continued.
We cannot ignore the timing, coincidental as it is. On this day, when you speak of seeking a sign, you suffer this vision.
Not suffer, Lorgar said quickly. It was enrapturing.
You looked in agony.
Well, yes.
Lorgar looked embarrassed, as though a guilty pleasure had been exposed.
It was excruciating, I suppose, but so magnificent also. And now it has brought me the music of the spheres. Such a wonderful arrangement.
You still hear it? What does it sound like? You never heard it before? Did you hit your head when you fell?
Yes. Wonderful. No. And no.
Lorgar's frown of chastisement made Corpheron's chest tighten.
You think I would keep this from you?
I do not know what to think,
Corpheron said, with considerable feeling. He finished his wine with a gulp, masking an overwhelming sense of frustration. Lorgar looked to him for guidance, so guidance would be what he gave.
But we already know that you have been marked out for greatness. I think, and this is only my initial deductions, that the vision is of yourself. It is a waking dream, a portent of what is to come, a self-revelation.
Like Tezen had on the slopes of Mount Ashask.
Corpheron struggled to remember the episode, his own powers of recollection far inferior to that of his acolyte. It was wise to assume the youth was right. There was not a line he could not quote verbatim.
Of sorts,
Corpheron hedged. His mind continued to race, and he spoke as the words came to him, once more channeling the raw wisdom of the powers as though from another place.
Today you lament the absence of the powers, and today they have sent you a vision. It is encouragement, not instruction, I conclude. An inducement, perhaps, to show you what might become if you apply yourself.
Apply myself to what?
Corpheron hesitated. Long had he plotted this moment, for a long time unsure how he would ever achieve his goal whilst absolutely faithful to the notion that he would. Lorgar had been delivered to him for that purpose, though Cor Faeron had only ever hinted at what he wished for his adopted son. Was it time yet?
The Covenant, Lorgar. You are the Lightbringer, the one who will push back the darkness, the purger of the faithless. The bearer of the word must become the principal of the Covenant, Archpriest of the Godsworn.
215. Cor Faeron waited with hammering heart, but he need not have feared. Lorgar considered his words only for a few moments and then nodded, radiating strength and commitment.
Then it shall be so.
We shall make for Varadesh.
Now?
Cor Faeron said, unable to hide his enthusiasm. He was ready for the long-anticipated confrontation with his old order, had dreamed of such moments every day since his exile. The preacher knew he would only have one chance to supplant those who had so wronged him, and the new bearer of the word was the key to that justice. Cor Faeron no longer professed to be master of Lorgar. He could not simply command the youth to go to the Sacred Towers, the City of Grey Flowers. Cor Faeron met Lorgar's gaze and fell into the grip of those violet eyes.
Not yet, said Lorgar, but soon.
Many answer our call, and many more will answer it in the days to come.
You would take an army to Varadesh,
said Cor Faeron, imagining the towers of his enemies being toppled, the walls of the city struck asunder by the host of Lorgar.
I shall bring a new creed, the truth of the One.
And who shall listen to the word? A few dozen nomads, a caravan now and then? It will take more than this rabble to break the defences of Varadesh.
There are those already willing to listen.
Lorgar fixed Cor Faeron with his penetrating gaze.
The slaves. A host of souls awaiting redemption.
2 days from here lie the mines at Taranthus. We shall begin there.
It is blasphemy to free slaves from bondage laid upon them by the powers. It is not the place of...
His protest dwindled beneath the unflinching gaze of Lorgar.
I am the bearer of the word, the messenger of the truth. Let it not be 5,000 fists beating against the gates of Varadesh, but 500,000 voices raised in prayer that open them.
Against such statement, all argument fled Cor Faeron, for Lorgar had spoken, and in his voice was the will of the powers.